What happened to the old ones, Ruck?
So long ago.
Is it possible they built their machines too well? Gave them pride and a desire to survive? Machines that wanted logic and order and found that frustrated by the illogical, emotional creatures that built them?
Yes, the old ones, the ones who made us. They grew fearful of us. They began to turn us off.
And isn't it Corby who's creating the same danger to you all over again? Unlike you, we humans are full of unpredictable emotions that logic cannot solve.
Yes. Yes, it had been so long ago, I had forgotten. The old ones here, the ones who made us, yes. Yes, it is still in my memory banks. It became necessary to destroy them. You are inconsistent. You cannot be programmed. You are inferior.
Now, whom pods destroy.
Welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I'm Terry, and as always, I'm joined by Graham.
Hello.
And by Derek.
Howdy.
Well, chaps, seems like ages since we were last here together.
Well, yes, and we're not actually here together now, are we?
No, we're not. Our last podcast was a couple of months ago, and of course, if you're listening to this in the future, then this is during the great COVID-19 outbreak, when Europe was gripped by the coronavirus and we're all isolated in different parts of the world. Well, actually, more specifically, Graham's at the other end of the road from where I am, and Derek's about, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles away from it. But, you know, it may as well be a vast distance. However, we're going to overcome these minor obstacles and not stop us from indulging in some high-grade Star Trek chat. And on this episode, we decided to take a bit of a diversion away from our usual fodder, which is the original series of Star Trek. And we're going to reflect on Star Trek Picard, the latest series from CBS All Access that just finished its final episode, but as we're recording, precisely a week ago today. Well, in the UK, if you want to be picky. Anyway, so 10 episodes, the return of Jean-Luc Picard, 20 years after the events of Star Trek Nemesis. And I will say right now, right at this moment, that if you have not seen this series or finished watching this series, then I regretfully must ask you to switch off now, because we will be giving away spoilers. You know, that's just no fun. You want to be able to watch it in your own time. So farewell. Perhaps you'll hear us again another time. For those of you who remain, let's get into it. I wanted, gents, to have a quick chat, first of all, about the look, feel, the aesthetic of this new series. And maybe we can just look at some particular aspects of the aesthetic that we particularly enjoy. Can we start with at the beginning, really, which is Picard's vineyard? Graham, do you remember the TNG episode Family, in which Jean-Luc Picard returns home after the Borg attack on Worf 359?
Yes.
So I would suggest probably, although you may not have clear memories of that episode, very, very faithful and authentic recreation of that episode and the vineyard in that episode.
Well, if you say so. I know of the episode, but I don't have a photographic view of what it is. It's rustic French, isn't it? And that comes across very, very, very well. Timeless scene. It's a very bucolic scene and lovely, lovely opening. And it gives a measure of where Picard is, isn't it? It gives him this lovely warm tones and, yes, old school. It is, as I said, timeless. Where it gives the idea that he's, well, withering on the vine, so to speak, in his vineyard, And yes, it's he's there having having a happy life, but obviously far removed from what he was before.
Well, Graham, we usually come to you for the blistering takes rather than the beautiful metaphors, but you know, that's fine. We'll have some beautiful metaphors. Maybe Derek, you might have some blistering takes later on. I don't know.
Blistering takes then.
Contrast it then the vineyard, the relative tranquility. If indeed tranquility is the right word, because Graham points out there is a sort of fuzziness about it, that sort of perhaps decay is too strong a word, but certainly a sense that there is an old man here who has reconciled himself to his immediate future, which is not terribly long. You contrast it with the aesthetic on Earth, generally, San Francisco, which I'm assuming is now very late 24th, possibly 25th century. How much do you think that the look of that has moved on from the old TNG series and movies, you know, insofar as what you can remember anyway?
Well, you didn't see too much of the sort of future San Francisco in it. I mean, you saw those sort of episodes where you just saw everything was just very like any glass metal building that you find in the center of London, and you know, and the walkways were basically the same thing, really. It wasn't much of a leap forward. I was actually going to go back to the vineyard thing actually for a second, because the other thing that I was, my little take on the vineyard compared to the real world is that Picard's in isolation. He's been exiled, basically. So he's like, you know, he's like the French prisoner, sort of like put on a little desert island somewhere, or Devil's Island. And then he goes back to civilization, which is the big corporate Starfleet, you know, which is just all glass and metal and concrete still, you know, whereas there are people who are living life. Well, he was in suspended animation on his vineyard, you know.
It's interesting comparisons to be made there, because I mean, and this it's not just Star Trek that does things like this, but I mean, when you have, if you compare sort of like the cleanliness of Starfleet headquarters in general, and then you've got Picard's vineyard, but you've also got Raffi's mobile home, basically, by Vasquez of Rocks, which is a beautiful touch. I'm sure we can all appreciate that. But you've got that kind of I think that the film, the producers are trying to create that sense that Star Trek, that the Federation or Starfleet's become very sterile, perhaps, you know, too sterile, and that its greatest and its finest are in somewhat reduced circumstances. Under the circumstances, is that, and that plays, I think, quite nicely, Graham, into the direction that the show, I think, takes creatively. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's badmirals on every corner, aren't they? In this, it was ever thus, wasn't it? In TNG, it was that everyone you ever met from Starfleet was some uptight prig who went by the book and had no place for loose cannons.
Bureaucracy and middle management.
Yes, of course, and it is bloated middle management, and that's what Starfleet is meant to represent. Whenever the writers bring it in, it's always got to be the whichever crew you're looking at are fighting the system as well as the enemy, aren't they?
Go on, Dan.
I was just going to say, I think it does show, it's a mirror to the world we live in at the moment, to be honest. Always has been Star Trek, and always will be. You know, it is reflecting what we've got to the moment. And the thing you were saying about Raffi's living environment is definitely a thing that a lot of people can relate to now, with the sort of trailer park stuff and the underclass, you know. And then you see this sort of corporate business sort of structure of Starfleet, where people don't know people's names properly until they read it on a computer screen when Picard goes in and says has to introduce himself, and you have a middle point person who's just reading what's on the computer, you know, who really doesn't really have the history into his reads on the back of it.
I thought that was a really interesting. I thought it was a really well put together, interesting. I thought that was a very good scene actually, because it contrast it with, say, the revival of TOS in the movies in the late 70s, early 80s, where the protagonist, Captain Kirk, is a legend and a hero. Jean-Luc Picard, when he returns to Starfleet, it's not necessarily under a cloud. In fact, it's worse than that. He's not even recognized. I mean, he's not even remembered. I mean, like, yeah, as you said, the receptionist sort of like looks up and then goes, oh, it's you, kind of thing, you know. And I thought that was a very interesting choice that they've made, this idea. Of course, it all comes out as we find out. I mean, we get an idea of that with the media interview that Jean-Luc Picard has fallen from grace. But I think it also acts as a bit of a metaphor for, you know, the Federation, perhaps, or certainly Starfleet, which is not the kind of utopian, elevated, enlightened institution that Roddenberry conceived it to be, and so many of Star Trek fans, you know, want it to be. And I would imagine, although I've not delved too much into fan sentiment about this show, because, you know, we've all got enough on our plate without having to watch or listen to any of that. But I mean, this is, I think, clearly one of the themes of the show, is that, you know, that things have, you know, paradise is somewhat broken or lost as a, you know, in the years since Nemesis, or perhaps even beforehand.
What I did like about San Francisco was the mass transit system, though.
That was awesome.
That was pretty damn cool, wasn't it?
That was brilliant. Yeah, just walking through the gateway and then coming through there. I mean, that was brilliant.
I was a bit disappointed. I was expecting tubes for people to get into, you know, like in Futurama.
yeah,
but you see,
tubes.
But I liked it because it, in essence, it was just like the sort of like the shutters you get on the tube, isn't it? Really, it's just like coming in and out. It's just like coming through the automatic Rottweiler, isn't it?
I mean, I like the idea of pneumatic tubes, for example, carrying people as they do in Futurama. But I mean, I suppose the mass transport system was a kind of equivalent of that, of like scattering people's atoms and then reassembling them somewhere else.
Roddenberry had more transport systems. If you think of like Genesis 2, the whole thing about Genesis 2 was there was a worldwide mass transport system, underground system in that. Yeah, sorry, Deviant then, but it is there.
No, I applaud your knowledge of Genesis 2, and just dwelling a little bit more on the aesthetic of the show. I mean, there's a lot of aesthetic going on here, and there's stuff that we can't spend too much went on. But just, I mean, I just wanted to have a quick conversation, see if you had an opinion on the Starfleet uniforms. I think this is something that people feel very strongly about. I know I do. And it's a key metric for me as to, you know, where as the Star Trek franchise is and as it grows. And I wondered whether or not you guys had a view on that. My own view is I thought it was a fairly conservative sort of like, you know, evolution on the original TNG / DS9 Voyager uniforms. I don't know if you guys had a view on that.
Well, it's very much in keeping with the film's franchises, wasn't it really, the TNG films, which went for this sort of grey, well, shades of grey option, which, yeah, very, very dull. Obviously decided to stick with that. Obviously decided to stick with where the films left off in more ways than one, which I was actually quite surprised by, and I'm sure we're going to go into that in detail soon. Yeah, I think it sort of helped with the muted palette of the series, and also as well, it makes it stand apart from Discovery as well. If you want something to stand separate from Discovery, you want people to make sure that they know this is 150 years apart or however long it is, then I think you do need those visual clues. You're not going to mistake watching Discovery for watching Picard, are you?
No. And I suppose, Dale, the other thing to consider is, of course, that much of the Picard series takes place outside of a Starfleet context. And so reinforcing the Starfleetness of Starfleet visually is probably very important to establish what exactly we're watching with the audience.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have that tie all the way through it, that's kept through with obviously the introduction of the starship that they use. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name.
La Serena.
Yeah, La Serena, because you can still see that it's still Starfleet, even though it's not Starfleet. You know, there is that's their home base. The technology that they use throughout is TNG technology, but better. So it does have that grain of it. But it does stand alone, because I mean the whole thing about Picard is not with Starfleet anymore, and also he's a different man as well. He's an old man. I mean, I was just rewinding to the Picard character in the first episode when we actually see him in action. He runs out of puff, you know, when the Romulans are introduced. And, you know, and he does play it like an old man he's playing older than he really is as well in real life, because he's actually quite athletic compared to the character he was playing there, which I think he's been playing on a bit until he gets his lease of life later on, you know.
I thought that La Serena was a really lovely ship, beautifully designed. And not necessarily sort of, no, I think that's not true, because, I mean, you had the warp nacelle structure there. I think that it's a kind of thing that you could think that maybe Matt Jeffries might well have conceived himself at some point. Who knows? It's not. I think it still sticks to that kind of Matt Jeffries aesthetic. I really like that ship. But perhaps, I'd like to just move on to the tone of the series, not necessarily its themes, but although we can conflate the two. You know, it is darker in tone. There's no question about it. I mean, it's from the outset, really, isn't it? You have the ugly confrontation with Picard and the journalist in the interview, where he's clearly angry and traumatized about, you know, the manner with which he left Starfleet and the what he considers to be the betrayal of the Romulan people. And also, although I found that this element a little bit jarring, was the Mars attack as well. The Mars attack, which I found that introduction to be a little bit jarring, because I thought it would talk anyway, by and by. The general tone of that, I mean, the characters that come in, and many of the characters, if not all of the characters that are in this, are all in a bad place in one way or another. There are no androids around. You know, Data is illegal, and you know there's the appearance of the mysterious Commodore O, who, while we don't realise who she actually is at the time, it's very clear that you look at someone like that and thinking, even for a Badmiral, she's pretty bad. I mean, guys, you know, Graham, why don't you kick us off with this? What's your sort of like overall feeling with the darkness of this series? Do you perceive it as dark, or do you think that it's actually a little bit more realistic, more authentic?
Well, there's a lot of spy about this, isn't there? It's very cat and mouse for a lot of the way. And I know what you mean about the attack on Mars. It's very difficult when you've got something that is very earthy, like the opening couple of episodes are. The scenes at Vasquez Rock, the scenes on Picard's vineyard, and others as well, as you're moving out, and especially when they go off and meet up with Troy and Riker as well. It's all very earthy and homey, but of course, you've got to mix that in with these huge, absolutely huge, spectacular scenes, which, of course, can be jarring. They can. And I suppose this is what the modern Star Trek series has to have now. You can't just have a simple one-on-one ship battle anymore. You've got to have a thousand. You've got to have giant orchids coming up and swallowing your ship because you can do it now. And yes, I know. Yes, we normally talking about a series where a big giant green hand held hold of the Enterprise. But I'm just thinking that in this case, there is an episodic nature about it in the fact that it does seem to think, right, okay, we need to have a big spectacular scene here. Now we've had lots of stuff where it's been people talking to each other. Oh god, we need something spectacular now. The same thing happened in Discovery as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing about this unlike, you know, obviously previous Treks, it's not the anthology. I mean, this actually reads, and it reads, yeah, like one of the Star Trek novels we used to read. That's what it is. They're all chapters.
Yeah.
Episodes. Mm. So, you know, and they are painted differently. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but it is one story, you know, and sort of like, I sort of missed the anthology, that they tried to do in Disco, but obviously, you know, they had that underlying main story lines going through it. But, I thought I like this, you know, but there were jarring bits that there wasn't a proper sort of, the jarring bits upset the journey. Picard was still on his journey and he still did his bits and pieces, but all the little bits that were put in between, like the Mars bit, as you said, was jarring because after the episode, you didn't really refer back to it. You forgot all about the androids there who were quite interesting at the beginning, and nothing else was going, went on about them. You know, the whole setup about, you know, the shipyards and everything like that was sort of forgotten about. It was just one little point, which actually took up a big chunk of that episode. You know, but I can't really moan about it.
Well, no, I'm not here to moan about it certainly, but I mean it's a good point. I mean they've got the two backdrops for this sort of, the two narratives working alongside each other. You've got the kind of whole synthetic thing, and then with that you're looking at, you know, characters like Agnes and obviously Bruce Maddox. I was delighted to hear that not only was Bruce Maddox, you know, referred to, but excited by the fact that he would actually be in this series as well. I'm very, very excited about that. But then you've also got the Borg cube, the artifact, and you know, these Jadvaj, for me, relatively hokey Romulan construct that I must say, I don't know whether I entirely bought in to that, if I'm being completely honest with you. I mean, I'm all for secret organizations like Tal Shiar and Obsidian Order and Section 31, but then secret organizations, the sort of you're thinking to yourself, well, so let me get this straight. There's been yet another hidden hand going through all of this at the wrong time. For a moment, I thought I was watching Spectre. And I'm not a big fan of these kind of like retconning, sort of like, you know, older continuities in order to tell stories. But for that, it was not, you know, unconvincing for me. I quite enjoyed that aspect of it. I don't know whether you guys have got a particular opinion on that.
Well, as I said, it was a bit spy in a lot of respect, but it didn't really seem to. It didn't seem that confident in the spy bits. It always seemed to like take you towards an idea and then all of a sudden move it on into something else. For instance, Narek's sister, for instance, when she was the first time you see her, she's a Starfleet. Well, she's a double agent. She's a double agent, isn't she? But that's it. That's it. We move her away from that. We're not going to see her anymore in a Starfleet uniform. That's done. And then she just becomes just this this sort of like shadowy evil person who is just slightly less evil, slightly more evil than Narek, and Narek is probably the more interesting character, because you don't know whether or not he's a good guy or a bad guy, or, well, you know he's a bad guy, but you think, well, he might be a good guy, but obviously he's not. He's obviously a bad guy.
They drop a lot of things, of really interesting things. They could have built upon.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea about spies in Starfleet, great. It would have taken her ages to actually get into infiltrate Starfleet, and then she drops it just like nobody's business. And then Admiral O does the same thing, and you know, whatever she is, and there are things that seem to be just put there and then just dropped really quickly without any.
Yeah.
There is a lot of plot in this going on in this series. And given that they had 10 episodes, it is surprising that there were parts of it that did feel rushed. I certainly felt that the climax, the final episode, that there were chunks of that episode that almost felt that they were missing.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like escapes that just were taken for granted. I thought that the middle episode where Picard goes to visit Riker and Troy, Graham's favorite character, Lil Riker, you know, and Troy. I thought that was a lovely breath, an interlude, while still at the same time bringing the story forward. I really enjoyed that. And partly because of huge nostalgia, but also because it was the time when actually Jean-Luc Picard, the character, felt and acted more like he was when he was captain of the Enterprise. And that gave me a nice feeling as well, because of the way that I thought that was well observed. But yeah, Narek I thought was a really interesting character that they could have, you know, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more conflict with that. But actually, Graham, he was entirely unresolved in his, I mean, he felt bad about,
yeah,
you know, messing with Soshi's mind and ultimately trying to kill her. But it didn't really stop him, did it?
Well, actually, no. I it was the casting of Harry Treadway there was a bit of a curveball for me, because of the fact that all the androids were were twins, and Harry Treadway is actually a twin. His brother Luke is also an actor and is identical to him as well. So
is that right?
Yeah, and so there's lots of stuff that I think that Harry Treadway's been in, and actually it's Luke Treadway's been in it instead.
Let's talk about Soji and Daj, and indeed, if you want to, Sutra as well, because it's played by the same actress, let's get into that, because we haven't talked about Data as well in this, and I think I'd like to dwell on that. But I think that the thing that obviously crossed my mind, and I'm sure it did you as well, was when the idea of Data having a daughter was, of course, a wonderful callback to The Offspring, that great TNG episode, great Star Trek episode, one of the best TV shows you'll watch. I must confess, the whole sort of I did think there was a whiff of Joss Whedon about this character, sort of like action-packed female character that, you know, is badass and goes around and sort of like slip, or something like Treadstone. I had echoes of that again, falling back on the spy themes that you refer to, Graham. That there's an element of Treadstone about her, is that suddenly she is triggered and she goes and can, you know, fight whole armies single-handedly.
Yeah, a bit Born, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's an interesting, I think it's a good way of moving the plot forward. And I think it's also a good way of establishing a strong female character. But did you, Derek, did you feel that they could have maybe taken that differently?
Well, I mean, we didn't really see much of the first version of her, because she dies very soon in the first episode, isn't it? She dies, but we do. I mean, we see a fair bit. She seemed to be a student or whatever she's doing, and with her boyfriend and all that sort of stuff. And it's quite interesting. And she goes for help, and it is a little bit of a shock when she dies, because it's a good sort of a great sort of upset then, and then obviously the reveal is she has
a sister.
A sister.
She has a twin sister.
Yeah, more than a twin sister. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same. It's the same trope. I mean, throughout the whole thing about identities and different identities and coming to deal with your different selves throughout, because you've got, there is a flashback obviously to Picard him as Locutus, you know, obviously you find Hugh, who is obviously an XP now, so he's
XP,
and you have a case of lots of people who have different lives, you know, and you have with Daj, she's a life that is completely made up for her. Everyone's got a second life in this thing, you know, and different identities all the way through it. Even the spies have different identities that they throw off, you know, and they are different people, you know. I don't know what it's trying to say. I mean, we like spy stories and we like sort of finding other things that are, you know, other sides to other characters. But the only people who don't have other stories and storylines is Riker and Troy.
Well, he barely has his own character anyway. So
come on now, quite. We don't want to be here all night.
We do have another life that obviously didn't actually come to fruition when they lose their son. So that's the other life that they have.
I have to say that I mean, as I'm just going back to that episode, I really enjoyed that episode, and because I took a great deal of nourishment from the backstory that we got from Riker and Deanna, Will and White, and Deanna, as they obviously stayed together but had, you know, great tragedy, but at the same time also great happiness. With, I thought Kestra was a wonderful character.
And
would not complain at all if we saw her in a future series of Picard or any other Star Trek episode for that matter. I thought that, I guess, Graham, the thing is that the creators made a decision that they weren't going to make this a TNG revival, that they weren't going to get the whole gang back together again. Well, hang on. I mean, the ensemble that they put together as the new crew on La Serena are all original characters, with the exception of, obviously, Jean-Luc Picard. And, all right, yes, 7 of 9, but initially. But so I thought that that one episode they had where they got Deanna and Will in and on the spectrum of good, strong episode that moves the plot forward and, you know, fan service, where would you say it was? Because it is both, I think.
It is both, and it can be both. And I think if you're going to have a change of pace, then that's the perfect time to bring them all back in, isn't it? To have something where you can have a reflective episode, an episode that brings everyone up to speed with what's going on, and also allows you to forget the ideas that the writers had that maybe weren't going anywhere. And also to move it on to the next stage. I think it was one of the more successful episodes, I think, in the series. And I don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the series. I really did. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're just sitting there watching this every Friday night and then you're just letting it wash over you, I think that's fine. I think what Derek said was interesting about everyone having a different side to them in this. Everyone having a rather complicated character, including the captain of La Serena. Was obviously had all his holograms around him to be like different aspects of his personality, with some really, really, really interesting accents.
All the accents, but not.
Actually, I I grew to really like them in the end. It was making my wife wince every time he opened his mouth, and I actually thought, actually I'm getting behind this. I think this is actually part of the whole stick, isn't it? It's like, you know, maybe this is it, and I actually got behind it. And as for the crew, it was quite good, and the ship design, it did sort of strike me as a very dull version of Guardians of the Galaxy. You've got, or either that or Futurama where you've got Picard being the new Farnsworth.
Well, I actually harked back to Blake 7.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you would.
I have
a hot take on that as well.
Blake 7 of 9, is that right? Yeah.
Well, because the thing is that... I didn't have that one.
I tipped my gut to you.
I don't know if I should say it now. I mean, the end episode. You know,
say whatever you like, though.
The thing is that when... We knew that obviously Patrick Stewart was on for at least the first series of this, and you know, and he loved when he read. You know, you went to the when you were in Las Vegas, were you? Mm-hmm. When you saw him, and he said that, you know, how he was really excited about this, and our hope was he's going to do one of these at least. And as we got to the end of the finale of this show, I thought, actually, it would be really good if they actually just killed off Picard now. And they did it with Blake 7. And they didn't Blake. Why didn't they do that?
I see that. I had arrived at the same conclusion. And I think the reason why the final episode, which I think is rather cramped, is because they decided that they were going to renew it for season 2 and keep Patrick Stewart was going to come back for season 2, and so they needed to contrive a way of not killing the character. I was disappointed with the final few minutes of season 2, some aspects of it, of the final few minutes of the last episode, because the drama of Picard's death was completely absent for me.
Yeah.
And this is because I already knew that they picked it up for series 2 because they announced it before they'd even started series 1. And I just thought, what am I watching here? I mean, I can maybe understand that if you are a civilian watching this and you know nothing about it, of which there will be many, many, many people who watched this series show, just watching it for the civilian. And they would not know.
You're not a civilian.
I didn't say I was.
Some sort of Star Trek army or something.
I didn't say I was. That's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is that for civilians watching it, they wouldn't necessarily know the news behind it all and know that there was a second series coming. But for I suspect quite a large number of, you know, Star Trek fans, Trekkies, Trek podcasters, you know, that you probably were sitting there thinking, well, this is beautifully done, but at the same time, there's no emotion in it for me because I'm pretty certain that there's going to be a MacGuffin that's going to, you know, resolve all of this. That said, I actually thought the transition from his death to his rebirth was a very, very skillful one, because I thought that scene with him and with Picard and Data was almost immaculate, actually. I thought that was a gorgeous scene.
Yeah, it did seem... My immediate reaction to it was what a pointless death sequence that was, because it takes you in there where you think, well, actually this is actually a good point to die. You've got the one thing, the one result thing you've got to resolve in your life, and you've done it. This is the noble death period. This is you're in the zone now. That you can die a happy man now, and. Yeah. And I suppose really it what it's there for is for him to have this conversation with Data about life and death but the whole thing of him going into into an android body that is exactly the same as he's got at the moment, and it's gonna age quite naturally, and you've come back exactly the same.
I mean, I think that is, yeah, I mean, you put it like that, Graham, and I'm afraid you're quite right. I mean, I suspect that speech that Data gave about why he wanted to die was actually originally written for Picard before they decided to bring the series back. And I think that's what Derek is probably driving at as well. Yeah. So I suspect initially the plan was that Picard would die a noble and dignified death, having, as you say, Graham, achieved, you know, laid his remaining ghosts to rest.
Yes.
I should say. In that respect, while I'm happy that the show is coming back, I'm a little bit disappointed with the way that they got themselves out of there. And it does strike me as they kind of, you know, it's certainly a shorter way of dealing with something like this than Search for Spock. And arguably they could have, you know, done this with Search for Spock, but there was an element of, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness about that whole thing, which doesn't leave a sour taste in the mouth. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. And I'm happy and it's great. And I'm glad that he's back for another series. But yeah, as I said, and in fairness, though, it's not unprecedented. You know, bringing back Star Trek characters from the death is something that they have done before.
You know, but it is, it would have been actually, I could have still watched Star Trek Picard without Picard.
Yes.
The second series very easily. And I think it would have been, you know, it would have been just as good.
But you do know that Blake 7 was cancelled after one series, was it? After Blake's, was it, or was it two?
No. They continued on for 5 series in total.
Was it?
Yeah, I think
Of course it was. What am I talking about? It's when they destroyed the Liberator is when it all went horribly wrong, isn't it?
Well, yeah, when they brought in the Scorpio, which was on the series, I believe. Who had the Liberator, maybe the third series they had Liberator, but Avon stepped up to the, as a character, became a brilliant character. And unfortunately, he died last year, the actor who played him.
He did. Okay, let's just talk about a couple of other characters then, please. Agnes, whom I would like to marry.
Yeah.
And I would like you gentlemen to make the wedding arrangements. Fantastic character. Let us, Graham, celebrate her first. Superb character, beautifully portrayed, but at the same time, again, I'm not entirely certain that I'm entirely happy where that situation ended up.
Yeah.
Did you like this show?
Yeah. we love this show. Okay. So she murders her ex-lover, yeah, her ex-partner.
Yeah.
Because she's got some kind of thing inside her that the Romulans have put in there the Romulans are controlling her actions or not. They're making her do stuff. And then they find out what this is, and everything seems to be okay. She's not going to go to prison, even though
she appears to be completely off the hook.
Yeah,
she's committed a murder,
a rather horrible murder as well.
She's not been controlled. She's been persuaded.
Yeah,
I mean, all right, yeah, forcefully persuaded,
coerced.
But she's not even been coerced into doing it. And yet she appears to be completely off the hook.
Yeah. And I think as a doctor, she'd probably know ways of killing someone that were probably not as horrible as the way that Maddox actually dies. It was
gruesome.
It was horrible. It really was.
It was horrible.
And yes.
And solely to shock the audience without it being in any way consistent with how you actually commit a murder. Not that I've committed any murder.
No. But it is. And it's usually something you associate with someone who is going to become a completely different character. Someone that is now going to be a baddie. Someone that is going to go on to the other side. Not someone who just sticks around and says, actually, no, I'm all right now. I don't have that thing inside me anymore. I'll try not to kill anyone else while I'm here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of thought, oh, right, well, Agnes is like actually like Dr. Smith in Lost in Space.
Yeah.
You know, the good Lost in Space, not the crap one. And I thought, well, this is really interesting, but then it transpires that that wasn't that at all. Another development that was kind of dropped and disappointing and unworthy of the character, I think, Del.
Yeah, definitely. I think that they build her up as, well, she became the most human character, or, you know, a very lovable character. She's probably the character you could relate to being on in a very strange place, someone who had never been in space before and, you know, thrown into this adventure. And it doesn't actually make it very clear that she's on a mission to, because she believes that she has to stop this, you know, event happening, which she doesn't seem that she really understands herself, and she has to murder for it. You know, it is, you know, pretty, you know, flimsy.
Yes.
Even though I really like her character, you know, I think that she's really nice, and, you know, it's sort of, yeah. And I'm glad she's sticking around, but it just does not wash. It does not wash. Well, people who do things that are not as bad as that, they get their heads chopped off.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of...
Flimsy is the word for a lot of the plot decisions in this. Which is...
Can we talk about 7 of 9 then in that case, Graham?
No, I liked her.
That was something good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the way that character's panned out, I actually do quite like.
Yeah.
I imagine that there might be some people who are Voyager devotees who watched 7 of 9's journey from being a drone to being a sort of like a fully formed human being might be disappointed by the manner with which she's progressed. But I have to say that I actually, although, I mean, you can then make the arguments about how, you know, she commits cold-blooded murder, which is not cool, but she's become product of the time that she's in. And also, I think she actually served better the illustration of the Romulan or the Federation's betrayal of the Romulans better than some of the Romulan characters did as well.
The breakdown of the Federation is as well, you know, yeah. Because obviously she's a Fenric Ranger, isn't she? Fenris.
Do you think then, chaps, Graham, I'll ask you this, do you think actually that she's a metaphor for the breakdown of the Federation, or do you think they didn't think it through that much?
I don't think they thought it through that much. I think obviously they can use the character there to as an example of where the Federation has dropped the ball. I think when you look at her and the other Borgs, you get this whole sort of feeling of recovering addicts about them and what they are and what they recognize themselves as being. They're always going to be Borgs, like an alcoholic is always going to be an alcoholic, even if he's been dry for 20 years. And it's, you get that scene when she hooks herself up into it again, when she becomes the Borg queen temporarily, and, you know, with high in the mind that she may never come back out of it again. It's and I thought that those aspects were good, and I thought that was something that really did work well.
Well, also her broken humanity as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, she kills people for revenge now.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she does. She goes around and you've really, you know, fucked me over, and I'm, you know, you've hurt me really badly, and you're going to die. She is the Avon of Blake 7.
Jeez. Oh my God! Here we go. Go on. All right, Del. Like, maybe we can just park the Blake 7 comparison.
Yeah,
I think until we've
better than Space 1999.
At least they've gone into Irwin. Actually, no, Terry. It was you that went into the Irwin Allen mode there, didn't you?
Yeah, it was me. I thought if I did it now, I might stop him.
There is no stopping him. Resistance is futile to Derek's Owen Allen obsession.
I thought that there's an interesting metaphor. I thought the XBs were a fairly good metaphor for othering of other race. I thought that was a very on the nose comparisons about racism and discrimination. Particularly, I felt that there was something being said about the othering of particularly of either immigrants or ethnic minorities, and in the way that the XBs were being treated there by Romulans, but also the fact that they've been shuttled into the artifact and been kind of like put out of the way and told to sort of look after themselves. Guys, I don't know what your opinion of iBorg was when it came out, but I mean, I thought it was a really interesting episode. Although I also at the same time think it marked a bit of a change because it started the humanization of the Borg, which is what Star Trek tends to do with its villainous races, is it tends to sort of like, you know, make friends with them. And I know that's a very Star Trek thing to do, but I'd always enjoyed the implacable nature of the Borg and the fact that they were so alien. And that's why I don't think First Contact works as a Borg film. I think it's a great zombie movie, but I don't think it's a great Borg film. But I'll link this in with the death of Ichev as well. And if you guys are completely forgiven if you're not familiar with Ichev's character, but he was a semi-regular in the final lockings of Voyager. I thought it was sad that those characters were done away with the way that they were, but I suppose it did evoke the right emotion in me, and I'm sure a lot of the other audience as well.
Yeah, and when those characters were killed, it was done in a way that you didn't need to know the backstory. You didn't need to know who Hugh was. You knew that he was important to other characters, and obviously as well for someone who is part of a collective, they might feel the death the death more strongly than others would. I thought it was good. I mean, it's years since I watched iBorg, but I remember the name Hugh, and I remember the character there. So it was interesting to see him back there and see where it was going. And it was just interesting to see the Borg there anyway. And obviously in a way that the Borg would be used by either the Romulans or the Federation as something to be studied and something to learn from and something to nick whatever they've got, exploit, yeah.
Particularly for the better, because you can again have conversations about the ties to, you know, the position on eugenics and the use of Borg implants to illicitly improve the species, and that trafficking of Borg implants that we had sort of like, you know, midway through the series as well, which I thought that on Free Cloud, which I enjoyed that plot line. I thought that was a very nice and also a very mature, steady plot line that came to a natural conclusion, and then we moved on. And Picard's homage to his Major D in LA Story was
brilliant.
If listeners haven't seen LA Story, it's worth watching. Actually, it's a decent Steve Martin comedy, but it's well worth watching for Patrick Stewart's cameo in that film, which he massively channels in that episode. The last of the characters that I want to just go for is Raffi, and the reason why I've selected her is because she was my favorite of the new ensemble. I thought she was a stellar character, a beautifully acted by Michelle Hurd, and a rounded character who clearly ruined by her association with Picard, who he was okay. He managed to retire in relative comfort, and she ended up becoming a drug addict living in a trailer park, basically, on the set of an old Star Trek series. And her journey, I thought, was really interesting. Derek, with you, we'll start with you. A few words about Raffi, if you would.
She's a more intricate, strong female character, because obviously she has the hard part of her life has come through. I mean, she seemed to be the story that they build up with her. She has worked with Picard. She's got burnt by him, but she was also quite a high up. She was Picard's number two. You know, she was. The Riker, you know, when he was away from the Enterprise afterwards, and obviously the issue after the supernova and the Armada and the android rebellion has obviously caused her, you know, her whole career to sort of crash down, and she lost her family and everything like that. And she's definitely a strong female character, but she's got all of those dark parts to her and vulnerabilities, you know. I can't really sort of fault her, you know, the acting skill of the actor of it, and I want to find out more of her background, I suppose. You know, we saw, you know, little bits of it, but I feel that the point that you've made before about you finally sort of see a much more of, because she's a drug addict, and where she the you know, she's actually, she fell into poverty. You know, poverty does exist in right in the middle of, you know, something that you would like to sort of see a bit more of.
Yeah, Graham, just quickly, absolutely. I mean, that's what she demonstrates clearly to us. And this, I think, is the big break from the Roddenberry vision. This is that poverty and social deprivation, social problems still exist in Star Trek and on Earth. And she is the clearest signal that that is the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not made clear whether or not she chooses to fall between the cracks or whether or not she actually has. The intimation when Picard comes to visit her is the fact that you know, he's got a vineyard and she's got a trailer. The one disappointing thing about the introduction of Raffi is that Laris disappears. Alda Brady is there in the first couple of episodes. Yeah. It's brilliant. And then, whoosh, she's gone. We can't have more than one strong female character in these episodes, I'm afraid.
That's very true. And thank you very much for raising that, because I wasn't going to raise those two characters. And of course I should do, because I mean they were I don't know quite what did they only have contracts for like the first three episodes or two episodes or something like that? Because they were looked like really interesting, and I'm surprised that, you know, he didn't bring them with him, but there you go. But you're right, Laris was a superb and very much involved in the initial part of the investigation as well, when it was more of a police procedural for a while. And it's funny, again, it's just another example of just how they pick up these threads and then they just cast them aside.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, yeah, 10 episodes to do this. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a long time to
Orla Brady has been a mature woman, because she's I mean, I don't know, is she 50 now? You know, she's
that's not mature, Derek.
A mature woman.
That's not mature. That's young, I think you'll find.
Okay, he's young, but but you know, and also having the actor who plays Raffi, she's obviously of not your typical younger woman in this show, you know, who has a major integral part. Maybe they thought they had too many, you know, old women, and they needed younger women as well. You know, I think they're trying to tick all the boxes. You know,
I think that there's a good demographic spread, isn't there, going on there with that. But yes, I think you're right. I mean, I think it is disappointing. I think there should be more room for older female characters in popular fiction, in fiction that's going to be watched by millions of people. And there isn't enough of it. And I don't think that I certainly wouldn't have complained. And I doubt very much that the series would have been diminished if Laris had joined the expedition as well, unfortunately.
But well, I mean, I like to, was it Cheeky Feckers, as she Irish Romulan is brilliant.
There's a lot of North European influence in terms of the acting, isn't there, going on there? Lots of British and Irish and European acting going on there, which I certainly appreciate. That for me is the influence of Game of Thrones for me, because of course that is, although made with American money, is a North European production with North European actors, and I think that a lot of genre science fiction, lot of genre fiction, look at that and go, oh, yeah, we'll go down that particular road. But that's no bad thing, because it means we're no longer portraying villains all the time.
We do make quite good villains, though.
We do make excellent villains, because when we don't have our flat vowels, you know, we've got lovely round vowels that can sound menacing.
Yes, and hide villain.
Anything else, guys? It's been nearly an hour, so I mean, what do you think, guys? Is there anything about this that's any hot takes that are left on the skittle?
Okay, the final episode. This is a TOS podcast, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to bring some TOS into this.
Bring it.
What a Little Girl's Made Of.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had the android character.
Rock.
Yeah. Rock.
Ted Cassidy. And
do you remember the thing is that his creators, who had created them millennia ago.
The old ones.
And the thing is that the old ones are these sentient creatures who are basically, you know, I love Lovecraftian, you know, is it like synthetic horror?
Derek, I have to find a hat to take it off to you because you've hit the sizzling take there.
That is, I declare it the most sizzling take of the entire history.
And you brought it back onto our podcast now as well, because now you've made it TOS as well.
You've brought it back to TOS. I think that is magnificent insight, Del. I mean, and I would love to think that would be the case. And you're right, because again, I mean, like, there is that Lovecraftian element to What Are Little Girls Made Of? And although I thought actually the giant android snakes were really, really, really badly done, I didn't like that at all. I thought they looked silly, but they looked like, you know, they looked like something that are just like snakes in a box or something like that. They didn't look remotely terrifying. I mean, I've watched too many bad kaiju films, and I think maybe that's, you know, contaminated my perception of that. But it was Lovecraftian, Del.
Yes, it did feel like it.
And is that the moment when you looked at that image and you thought, hang on, could it be?
It did, because when we did our podcast, we did actually mention and that we did go through a couple of episodes talking about Lovecraft, and that was one of the takes that we took in that episode. I remember that, and it sort of clicked when we saw when the you know, the android or the artificial intelligence come through. I didn't see them as loads of snakes. I saw it as one entity of like a many tentacled, you know, sort of many angled thing, like a Lovecraftian sort.
Like a Lovecraftian thing, yeah. Well, did you have a view on that, Del Boy? I mean, beyond just simply basking in the glory of that tape.
The problem is that part of the story is too big, you know, for Star Trek now. You know, you've got to put that to bed. You know, it's such a big idea that they had through this story about sort of like sort of an entities that have left the galaxy, you know, our galaxy, and gone to another one. You know, we just have to forget about it now, even though that they've incurred, you know, because you brought a bigger Borg into this universe. Where do you go from there?
Well, I mean, what do you reckon, Graham? Do you think maybe that actually these what were they called? The Admonition. I don't know whether that's the name of the race, but the Admonition is what it's called, isn't it? Event. Yeah. I mean, do you think that Picard 2 might be Admonition 2, you know, the return of the old ones?
Well, I suppose you're going to have to end it by opening a portal to another universe, aren't you, at some point? Because that's how you finish every season of everything now, isn't it?
That's where you put all your plots.
Yeah, it's just all our plots have just disappeared through that big hole in the universe, and it's opening up now, and they're all going to fall back on us. And oh my god, all those plot devices that we used early on that didn't work are going to come and attack us again.
I've just closed it just in the nick of time. Okay, well, we'll leave then. Bye.
Yeah, okay. Wait a minute. I'm going to die. Oh, no. It's fine. I'm alive again.
When I saw that assemblage of Romulan warbirds and starships, starships,
oh, God.
I knew that we were not going to be seeing a massive epic space battle, because I thought, you know, you're never going to be able to coordinate all of that together, because that's going to be such a hard technical task for what is still a TV show. Forget it. You're never going to be able to do it. And it's just going to be a standoff. I mean, you just thought, I know how this is going to end. And I must say, I thought that the additional addition of Riker was pure fan service. And
Of course it was.
Look, he's just taken himself out of retirement, and they put him in charge of a massive fleet to go up against the Romulans. Now, maybe go with someone who's got more recent experience with Star anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's fiction, and I know it, but I mean, it's just like, you know, so I think stretching the bounds of credibility there, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, it was a nice, tender moment, but really, it's like, well, we need to have this moment with Picard and Riker. And they already had that moment on the lake, you know, there. Yeah. And it was nice. It was touching.
The lake was the time, wasn't it?
The lake was the time. And I thought that was a thing. But, yeah, we've kind of picked a few holes in this TV series. But I want to wrap up, I think, Derek, unless Graham, unless you have an even more sizzling take.
I can't beat that. It would not be sizzling at all. It would just be faintly warm and a little bit steamy, I think. But that was it, really.
If you feel bad, remember you are the guy who suggested that the Enterprise incident was actually a Section 31. No, it was actually a Tal Shiar plot.
Yes.
and that was brilliant. So, I mean, kudos to you, Derek, for trumping it. It's awesome. So,
once in a lifetime.
I don't think that there's anything more that we have to offer, but what I will just ask you guys, just to summarize, please, Derek, you first. Did you like Picard? Are you looking forward to the new series? What did you particularly enjoy about it? Just a few seconds on that, please, if you would.
Very quickly, because I was actually tuning in every week, it was great to have a show that you just watch week to week rather than, you know, gouging on it in one go. And it's nice that you forget about what was in the episodes in between, because we've missed loads of bits and pieces. Our conversations have sparked things in our heads. And I'm sure we'll be going back while we're still in lockdown. We'll be going back and rewatching it and picking up those extra little bits and pieces. And it's great to have an old friend back. I mean, the series itself and the universe is an old friend. And it gives us a bit of comfort through dark times. You know, and I'm sure, you know, you have little things like this. We all share it as well. Our conversations here is like we've got a shared interest, and we share it with our friends and our loved ones and people at work. And so that's what Star Trek is about as well. So, yeah, I enjoyed it and I can't wait for more.
Yeah, Graham, I have to say that I enjoyed this. This was a far more enjoyable experience than Discovery. Even though Discovery is set in a kind of TOS era, I feel it's an obvious reason. It's got Picard in it, who's a loved character. But when they said they were bringing back Star Trek, I wanted it to be a TV show set X number of years after Nemesis. I wanted it to be a continuation, and I've got that. And so for me, it's really, you know, it's been a much more enjoyable experience than, say, watching Discovery. You don't have to compare it to Discovery, but please, your reflections on Picard Series 1.
It's interesting that you say you wanted to see an episode, a series set in that time, because for me, the greater universe seems very, very uninteresting as far as a television series is concerned. I like the ensemble that they've got there. I think that's really strong. It was nice to see that there were a band of brothers there right at the end, ready to go off and have adventures. And I like the idea that season two is going to concentrate on them, and maybe we'll find the backstories, or they'll all be allowed to go on their own mini adventures or something like that on their own. And we'll find out more about them, and we'll find out what Dr. Agnes has infected them all for them all to just suddenly forget what a hideous murderer she is. And I think that's bound to come out. It's bound to come out. And obviously, like, all these storylines haven't been forgotten. They're just going to be useful ammunition later on.
Like any good comic book series, you know, never, nothing goes unwasted in the end. And I guess that's probably the way to think about it. And on that profound note, simply, I think we will knock it on the head there. Gents, I've really enjoyed spending the hour with you talking about Star Trek Picard, and it's brought back some memories of the show. And I'm massively on board with a kind of Blake Seven style thing going forward. And I'm massively on board with them going back to that planet where our little girl's made of was set, and seeing whether or not maybe they can dig into the heritage of the old ones. And I think I'm going to go and watch What a Little Girl's Made Of quite shortly. And if you're listening to this and you've not seen that episode, because there's a chance that you don't watch much TOS, then go back and watch it and see whether or not what Derek says has made sense. So, with that, we will say goodbye and wish you all much happiness and safety. And we will be back in a few weeks' time, frankly, because we may as well, because we've got nothing else to do, with more blistering Star Trek takes. Until then, from myself, Terry, and from Graham, and from Derek, it's goodbye.
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 You can have the chicken.